chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees. Chicken in the pots, the martyr walked the Petaloomies. Out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour, local food, farming, culture, and agriculture. It's Michelle Anna Jordan, live in the flesh. It's been about almost 4 months to the day, I think. I think I'm right, huh, Mike?
I think so, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, about 4 months. I took a six-week leave in the middle of December, and it grew like a little, like a couple of rabbits. It grew. But for everyone who's called, emailed, posted on Facebook, asked me at the farmer's market, thanks so much for valuing Mouthful and being happy to hear that, yes, indeed, it's coming back. Mike and I both wanted to move things to 6 o'clock instead of 7 o'clock for quite a while. And so thanks very much to our new program director, Sean Knight, for making that possible. And now you can listen to Mouthful and then talk about it at dinner. How's that work for you? Instead of making everyone shut up during dinner so you could hear it. I'm glad to be back. Always glad to talk to you on the radio. We've got some changes coming up in the next few weeks. I'm currently talking to people. I want to have a co-host. So that's something in the future. And I'm looking to make it even more local than it has always been. Been doing a lot of writing lately since I was here last. I finished 5 more books, and increasingly everything I do just points to the importance of local in so many ways, and I've always had that commitment, and it's just increasing. And on that note, I want to introduce our guests, because I think they're going to chat a lot. And there are two local boys, men, young guys, and they do something really interesting at the farmer's market. It is Sean and Kevin Pastel. They are blood brothers. Until recently, they have been called Farm to Ferments. They are currently undergoing a name change, experimenting with a variety of things to call their endeavors. But one of the things you can definitely call their endeavor is delicious. They make this whole rainbow of fermented foods, beverages, and other things that are just so vibrant and full of energy. I've become really enamored of them. And on that note, welcome to Mouthful.
Hello. Thank you.
You guys were at the farmer's market yesterday. You were at the farmer's market in Santa Rosa, Wells Fargo. That was yesterday, and then today in Sebastopol.
Yeah.
Those are the two markets you attend, right?
Yep. Those are the ones for now, yeah.
Yeah. And then you, Sean, I first knew because you were working for the greengrocer.
Yeah, the greengrocer.
Right. And Kevin, you weren't also doing that, were you?
I have in the past.
I've
worked on and off since I was 16.
Okay. And yeah, what are you now, 17 and a half?
No, I'm 22.
Okay. So when did you decide to go out on your own to do this fermentation thing?
Last year, around this time, I guess. Just tired of cooking, really.
Mm-hmm.
Really fast-paced, stressful environment.
Sure.
Tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
Wanted to get more out of my food as well. I found that I was needing to eat more and more fermented food while I worked in a high-stress environment just to alleviate the stress.
And did you notice that being really effective?
Oh, definitely. These kind of foods potentiate your energy tenfold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how did you discover that? How did you begin to explore?
Someone got me a kombucha mom.
It's like a vinegar mother.
Well, yeah, and it's almost identical.
Okay.
They call it a SCOBY. So it's a symbiotic relationship between bacteria and yeast.
Mm-hmm.
They form a colony that looks like a little alien life form that floats in tea, and it ferments it. It turns the sugars into organic acids,
mm-hmm.
and then you consume the beverage, which is essentially the baby bacteria and tea and whatever sugars left.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that through my experimentation that if you put certain herbs... like I consider pretty much every herb to be psychoactive in that it affects the nervous system directly. So if you take like a lavender tea, which is a sedative,
mm-hmm.
If you take lavender tea, you drink 16 ounces of it before bed. It's going to sedate you, make you feel like an amoeboid, and you'll float off into dreamland.
This is lavender, just lavender
tea? That's just lavender tea. But
16 ounces of it is what you need.
Yeah.
Okay.
But when you brew it into kombucha and you drink that, you need maybe half that amount to have the same effect. I tested this with a lot of herbs, and so I started making herbal tonic kombuchas with a lot of herbs, and just I would mix certain ones. Like, I have a nervous system tonic at the market that I serve now. It's mainly for the male reproductive system and for nervous system relief, like stress relief and stimulation of the nervous system.
Mm-hmm. What's it called?
It's called For Your Head, or Feed Your Head.
Oh, Feed Your Head. That's the one right here that you just showed me.
I have that one.
Okay. Yeah, that's got the... Oh, it's got Damiana in it.
Skullcap, Brahmi, Ashwagandha.
Cinnamon.
There's a little cinnamon the flavor, yeah.
Yeah, nettle leaf, nettle root.
That's another thing I found with kombucha and jeon. This is actually a jeon, which is a kombucha-like thing, but it ferments honey and green tea instead of black tea and sugar. Mm-hmm. And it ferments much faster. It has different properties. I don't know if I can even call it a jeon, because that's a Tibetan thing. Mm-hmm. And they would probably say that, no, because it's because you've fed it so many different things, it's your own culture now. It's not, you can't
not
call
jeon.
It anything.
Yeah, it's not a jeon culture.
They'd even say that about kombucha.
Okay.
That you've changed it so much that you have to call it something else because it's not the original kombucha culture. Mm-hmm. These cultures, they take on the properties of anything you feed them.
Mm-hmm. What about the feeder? Do they also take on some of the energy of the individual who's feeding them?
Oh, some people have speculated.
Yeah, because in a number of things, when I say making of the true balsamic vinegar, Aceto Balsamico Tradizionale, olive oil.
Yeah.
They say that one of the elements that is in the final product is the personality.
I've had Korean people say about my kimchi, it's good, but it doesn't taste like grandma's because grandma's hands were not in it. And they won't buy it because it's not grandma's. There's a belief that fermented food, when you use your hands, your bacteria, all because 90% of you is bacteria.
Sure.
They've counted the human cells. 90% is bacteria. And that's on your hands. And as grandma needs the kimchi and does her thing, cures it, and puts the chili paste between all the leaves, her bacteria is getting in it. And then it takes on different properties to them. Mm-hmm. And I haven't ever had grandma's kimchi, so I don't know.
Well, now there's
could be great.
Kimchi is so prevalent in Korea that it makes the news. And what is it, the day that everyone's supposed to make it? Is like November 15th or something?
I forget what the holiday is, but yeah. Everybody gathers.
And that they put it on the top of their roof and it ferments for like 9 months or something. And they run out, the stores run out of the, you know, ingredients that go into it.
Yeah. Some Koreans think I'm crazy for trying to sell it too, because in their country, everybody makes it themselves.
Yeah.
And there's hardly any products on the market.
Yeah. And some people I've read, I've not been there, but I've only read, they have separate refrigerators for all of their kimchi, and they're made in clay pots.
There are hundreds of varieties that these people have. I've been to a few Korean people's house, like Sam, the mushroom
Sam,
guy,
yes.
Bohemian Wellbeing.
Sure.
His mushrooms are excellent. But I've been to his house, and he has hundreds of different varieties.
And
he won't tell me any of his secrets, but they're all quite tasty.
Now, how did you start? And Kevin, you jump in too.
Yeah.
Although, did your brother start this and drag you along?
No. So back over the summer, I was actually going to school in Lake Tahoe at Sierra Nevada College for an environmental degree, and I fell about 100 feet rock climbing in April.
Ooh.
Last April, about a year ago, actually yesterday. And moved back home with my family in Windsor, and saw my brother's ferments, and he was basically nursing me back to health while I sat on the couch and just fed me, like, you know, 4 meals a day of gourmet farm fresh vegetables and all these delicious ferments. And I said, there's no way we shouldn't sell this. After eating all the stuff in the stores, we decided, okay, I'll do the numbers, and he keeps experimenting, and we'll see what happens. And then June 26th, 2014, we filed for the business, And then took about 3 months to get all the permits together, and here we are now at the farmers markets, and that's pretty much how it began.
But it seems like you've been there longer because you just so quickly became a part of things.
Yeah, I mean, he's been doing this for 6 years, so I can't really take any of the credit for all this.
Fermenting.
Okay, fermenting.
After I worked with the kombucha, I think my mom bought me a fermentation book by Sandor Katz.
Oh, yes.
Wild Fermentation. So uh-huh. I made every single recipe in there. Mm-hmm. I just got this creative itch. Mm-hmm. And I made everything, and a lot of it's pretty gross, like tasting-wise. So
fermented shrimp.
Yeah.
Fermented shrimp. You know, it's a real specialty flavor.
Yeah.
Have you come across that?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, a lot of Koreans will put fermented shrimp in their kimchi.
Yeah.
I keep mine vegan for because we're in Sebastopol.
Sure.
And,
just
bigger market for uh-huh. vegan kimchi.
Yeah. Well, there's that dish that they were serving for a while at Infusions, which is really popular all over Japan, ochazuke. And it's rice.
I have not heard.
It's rice. I think it's sushi rice, usually. So it's rice. There's a couple of vegetables involved. Then fermented plum, and I forget the name.
Oh,
and,
umeboshi?
Yeah, umeboshi, and then fermented shrimp, and just a little, like a quarter of a teaspoon. And then what you do is you pour brewed tea over it.
Mm,
and like the way to think about it is like you have a bowl of cereal and you pour milk over it.
Yeah.
But it's rice and you pour hot green tea over
it. Yeah,
really good.
It's actually an old Japanese remedy to pour matcha tea over an umeboshi plum and then drink that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's an old thing.
Yeah, and it's really
delicious,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. Ochazuke, it's really good. But to have that complete, full, round flavor,
you
gotta have the fermented shrimp.
Yeah. No, a lot of things I tried, like this thing called gundra, which is greens that you leave out in the sun to wilt, and then you don't salt them. You just shove them in a jar. You mash them, beat them mm-hmm. until juices come out, and then you shove them in a jar and leave them to ferment for a week. Then you take those out and you dry the fermented leaves in the sun, and then you eat that. And it's quite chewy and almost inedible. But I've revised recipes and made things work
mm-hmm.
Based on my chef experience at the Green Grocer. Mm-hmm. I know how to combine flavors and get the textures I want from mm-hmm. ferments.
Mm-hmm.
It's much easier when you have that kind of experience to do that and readapt fermentation recipes mm-hmm. to it.
Now, are you two making a living at this?
I wouldn't say making a living.
Okay,
yet.
We are living because of the community of the farmers market.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a it's not really a lot of times I don't need money is the thing. I can trade my ferments. I can buy cabbage from a farmer and then trade them back that cabbage fermented for more cabbage or for things that I want to eat. So we can utilize trading in the market to stay alive, survival-wise, and thrive even because there's so much good stuff at the market that you're never in want for anything, really.
Uh-huh. Trade your landlord.
Yeah. I wish I could trade my rent for kraut.
Yeah.
I've had people come up to my booth who want to work for me that want to trade work for kraut,
uh-huh.
which is exciting.
Uh-huh.
If people like it that much, I mean.
So how much are you producing and selling a week? I mean, I don't have any sense of your volume. I just see what you have.
Every week, it's...
I mean, we probably sell about 5 to 10 gallons of
fermented
foods,
products.
And then another like 10 gallons of beverages.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good... Okay, so
I like that.
15 to 20 gallons.
We only drink half of it ourselves. You know.
And that's at one market or at the two markets?
The two markets,
do you see yourself expanding?
Oh, definitely.
Definitely, yeah.
What are your goals?
I really want to be with Good Eggs. San Francisco
yes.
distribution
Good Eggs,
company.
That distribution center out of San Francisco.
Also, there's a new one called Grub Market.
Right.
I want to get in contact with them. And then also a lot of restaurant accounts is what we're kind of searching out right now. There's a food truck opening up pretty soon. They don't have a name yet, but he really wants to put our kimchi on everything. Mm-hmm. He's having a whole Korean
So there are people, there are restaurant individuals who are going to not do their own ferments, but reach out.
Yeah, a lot of it is a lot of work. experimenting and getting it right.
And space. So, it's a lot of space for restaurants.
Sure. And one of the differences between our ferments and anything you can find in the stores or homemade or whatever is that we don't use crock pot, like crocks.
Right. You use
we use anaerobic fermentation.
Right.
Which is what the is preferred when you don't want to when you want to use less salt.
And not get that yucky stuff
and
on
not
top,
get any
on top
mold.
That we
never,
talked about.
We never get any mold or yeast because we have hermetically sealed vessels that have airlocks so they can breathe carbon dioxide, but no oxygen ever gets in.
And that, that makes it so, you know, the only bacteria that we're producing is the stuff that's in the cabbage and the vegetables.
Right.
It's, you know,
and
we don't
can
get
use,
wild
we
stuff.
Can use half the salt as any,
oh,
other,
really?
As any other company using crocks.
Uh-huh.
We've looked at the sodium on jars in the store, and they're definitely doing like a pound for every 50 gallons. Mm-hmm. Or
how much?
5 gallons. A pound of salt for every 5 gallons.
A pound for 5 gallons?
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So we use half or less.
I think I do 2 tablespoons of salt for 5 pounds,
pounds
of cabbage.
Yeah, one of the common ones is like 3 tablespoons. And you can actually use less is the thing. Especially when you're using anaerobic fermentation, you can use a lot less.
Let's take a little musical break and come back and talk about the science. Like, what does anaerobic mean? There's going to be a lot of people who don't know. Yeah. So let's do fermentation from the bacteria.
From the beginning.
Cinnamon girl.
Neil Young Live, Cinnamon Girl, and I know you guys have had some cinnamon in some of your ferments. I think you had some in your... Did you put cinnamon in the Meyer lemons, although the Meyer lemons, the preserved lemons, they're not fermented, but they're really good.
Yeah, not technically fermented,
but
they're mighty tasty.
And
we actually utilize them for other ferments.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, the lemon rosemary sauerkraut is preserved lemons that are about a year old.
Uh-huh.
And I put those in with a brine rosemary.
Mm-hmm.
Pour salt water over it and ferment it separate. And then I take that brine and the lemons and I put that in the cabbage after slicing it. And then I ferment that another 3 weeks.
Oh, that's a great idea. That sounds really good.
Utilizing preserved lemons is sometimes tricky.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of things that...
I just made yesterday, tremoulin.
Oh, what is this?
And tremoulin is a Moroccan sauce. It's sort of like Italian salsa verde, Argentine chimichurri.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's got greens. It's got, parsley, cilantro, and yesterday I didn't have enough of those two, so I added some sorrel.
Mm.
And you pound a bunch of garlic. You add some, I do smoked paprika, hot paprika, chipotle powder, and cumin. And then normally you do a bunch of lemon juice, but I pounded, I think, three or four wedges of preserved Meyer lemons, and then you add olive oil until it's the right consistency in the herbs, and it's a ubiquitous sauce that's served with tagines, all kinds of tagines, but I did a green salad with a grapefruit cardamom vinaigrette, chopped it with a smashed egg salad, and then drizzled some tremoulin over it.
I have not eaten yet. This is, this is detrimental.
It was an art event. I had to show off.
We've utilized cinnamon in... we've done a blended sauerkraut, like a sauerkraut sauce.
Oh, interesting.
So it's a sauerkraut applesauce with cinnamon. And there's some studies that show that cinnamon will actually prolong shelf life of anything you put
in. Yeah, it works as a preservative.
Yeah.
It does good things in your body, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so what is fermentation? What is anaerobic fermentation? For people, let's do... Fermentation 101.
Yes. What is fermentation? Fermentation is a process of, a fermentation is a decomposition of materials by microorganisms into other things, like organic acids.
Mm-hmm.
In the style that we do domesticated fermentation, where we create an environment utilizing salt that...
That's okay. and what kind of
it's a recomposition of raw materials by the microorganisms. They eat sugars in raw materials like cabbage or like carrots or like any vegetable or any sugar. They convert those sugars into organic acids that we then utilize.
Okay. So it's like if you think about grapes. Grapes are fermented by yeast, and basically, if I have this right, the yeast eat the sugar and they excrete alcohol.
Alcohol and carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
And other chemicals.
Uh-huh.
Sulfur, ammonia, all kinds of things are going on. But it's essentially just microorganisms the byproducts that come out of their munching.
Yeah, and then if you leave that wine sitting around long enough, you'll get some acetobacters. And the acetobacters come in and eat the alcohol and turn it into acetic acid.
Yeah, and there's lots of different microorganisms like that that do different things.
Mm-hmm.
In an alcohol ferment, it's mainly the yeast.
Mm-hmm.
And in a vegetable ferment, we prefer to have it be bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you do it, certain methods, you might get yeast on top. And
if you do get yeast on top, will they produce alcohol in that situation?
They will
as
produce
well?
Alcohol out of your cabbage. Yeah, you'll have alcoholic kraut.
Uh-huh.
We've done one that's plums and shiso sauerkraut.
Shiso leaf?
Yeah.
So good.
And the bacteria actually do convert some of the sugars from the plum into alcohol.
And when that happens, what sort of flavors do you get?
Pretty fruity. It's like a fruity sour.
Whiny.
Sure.
Plum
they've
wine.
They've been known to be pretty explosive jars. Some of them will just start bubbling out when you open them.
Uh-huh.
And it just looks very alive, and people love it.
Uh-huh.
People love seeing it. People love eating it.
Okay, so you have these, you have a rainbow of jars lined up here on the table. So why don't you pick whatever and start telling me about what you've got.
Yeah, we could start with one of the most basic krauts we have. A sauerkraut is just a German ferment. Mm-hmm. It's a shredded cabbage and salt, and then they let it ferment. The thing about fermentation is to create the environment that you want for the beneficial bacteria in order to select them out of the group of bacteria that could proliferate.
Right.
You add enough salt, and then you the salt brings out water from the cabbage. Mm-hmm. You press the cabbage underneath that water, and in that environment, that anaerobic environment.
And anaerobic means without oxygen.
Without oxygen, right. Yeah. In that environment, the beneficial bacteria that you want will proliferate, change the pH. Mm-hmm. It'll lower the acidity, mm-hmm. or increase acidity, lower the pH. Mm-hmm. And after about a week, it's at about like 3.4, and that's enough acidity to keep any botulism out. Mm-hmm. That's why it's such a good preservation method.
Uh-huh.
And in the old days, it was mainly a preservation method.
Right. People didn't have refrigeration.
Yeah. But we've learned over the years through modern science that by fermenting cabbage, say you have a cabbage and it has a certain amount of vitamin A, vitamin B, vitamin K, all that. Mm-hmm. By fermenting it, you're actually making those vitamins and minerals more bioavailable to you.
Oh, interesting.
So it's not that the vitamin C increases, it's just that the digestible vitamin C that you can get from the cabbage, you then have that available. So it increases that.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I mean by increasing bioenergetic potential of foods.
Right, interesting. And so this jar is very pink. Is that because you used red cabbage?
This is a red cabbage, green cabbage, salt, apples, and caraway seeds.
Oh, no, you put apples in.
It's a traditional Russian way to do it. The Germans do it as well.
Uh-huh.
Throw apples in there.
Uh-huh.
The apples actually take on a very acidic quality. They're not really sweet anymore.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because the sugar is dissolved by the bacteria.
Yeah.
Cool, I passed my exam.
Converted.
Converted.
Yeah.
Yes, converted.
Oh, and I heard you say earlier what type of salt we use. We only use the pink salt.
What kind of pink salt?
Oh, Himalayan pink salt.
Himalayan?
Yeah, it's it may not be local, but it's what the bacteria like. They like minerals. Also, we found that sea salt from the Pacific, well, we might not trust it right now anyway, but it adds kind of a oceany flavor,
mm-hmm.
like kind of like the sea. And I don't know, we just found that the Himalayan pink salt kind of provides the best best flavor.
Mm-hmm. This is very nice.
Yeah, it's
no sweetness.
No.
No.
It'd go really good on a Reuben, I think.
It would.
It's really good in salads.
I love sauerkraut. I used to eat it out of a can when I was a little girl. Yeah, this is very nice. Oh, there's the caraway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of people are like, did you put rye bread in this? Because they associate caraway with rye, and mm-hmm. Caraway is its own seed. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah, that's very nice.
So there's that one.
Mm-hmm.
That one's one of our more basic ones. And then this is a lemon rosemary.
Oh, it's the one you talked about a few minutes ago.
It's got the preserved lemons and the rosemary brine. And it's fermented about 4 weeks.
Now, you talked about using an anaerobic fermenter.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
So basically, it's if you've ever seen a Fido jar,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the wire bale latch that hermetically seals mm-hmm. with the rubber silicone
right.
Seal. If you've ever seen those keep oxygen completely out, but they don't allow carbon dioxide out. Or it keeps oxygen from coming in, but doesn't allow it to breathe.
So would it then like burst?
It might explode.
Yeah.
It depends on what you put in there. It might explode. Like I've had bottles that I've sealed that have exploded completely.
Mm-hmm.
Glass shattering everywhere.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
That was in my own kitchen days of experimenting with kefir cultures.
Mm-hmm.
They get quite explosive.
Yeah.
Kefir is traditionally used, like Tabikos, water kefir,
uh-huh.
is traditionally used to make alcohol, like wine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in
Mexico. I didn't know that. Oh.
It's more of a, they let it go a long time.
Okay.
It's not like now we do it for 24 hours. And it's, you know.
But I mean, they let it go longer.
They let it go to wine, like 10% sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and if you do it with fruit juice and you let it go for a while, it does make a pretty dandy wine.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's interesting. The rosemary in it's really delicate.
Yeah, super delicate.
Yeah, it's not too much rosemary. Can
I didn't
be
want
really
to overpower.
Aggressive. Yeah, it can be really aggressive, but that's pretty delicate.
Yeah,
it's a really aromatic herb.
Yeah, I grow tons of rosemary, tons of it.
Well, we're always on the search for rosemary.
Oh, if you need rosemary, let me know.
Oh, yeah.
I'll bring you whatever you need.
Well,
I've got certain things. I've got rosemary. I don't know if you ever need sorrel. I have a lot of sorrel.
I need tarragon. Do you have tarragon?
Tarragon's really hard to grow.
Yeah.
You know, especially in
a
drought year,
yeah.
You need a lot of water, you need cool, and you need shade.
Yeah.
Tarragon is hard, but I have a ton of sorrel, a lot of rosemary, a lot of oregano, a lot of mint, but everyone has a lot of mint.
Yes, you know. Indeed.
Okay, let's see.
So my next ferment that I bring to the market is this, I take whole radishes.
Oh,
and
it's
I ferment them in a kimchi-esque brine.
Mm-hmm.
Normally they'll use sugar to sweeten it, but I don't use sugar because I can't get it locally.
What do you mean?
Like if I could get sugar cane, I'd use
it.
But yeah. I'm not going to use any kind of, I don't know.
Processed.
Yeah, processed sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So what I sweeten it with is yacone.
Oh, yeah.
Which is an Andean tuber that is very sweet.
Earthworker Farm sells it.
Yeah, and they're edible raw.
Uh-huh.
But they're very sweet. They have a lot of prebiotic sugars.
Mm-hmm.
Is the thing.
Okay,
so it's a probiotic mixed with prebiotics.
And tell me about the radishes themselves.
The radish is just a red radish, like an Easter egg radish. It's fermented in a brine of salt water, yacon juice, ginger, garlic, onions, green onions. There's six different chilies.
Oh, okay.
I get real Korean, organic Korean chilies from Minhee.
Uh-huh.
She's the only one I know around Sonoma County actually growing real Korean chilies.
Yeah, it's Minhee Hills Farm.
Yeah, Minhee Hills Farm. She's great.
Yeah, she and Damon.
Yeah, yeah. We trade kimchi sometimes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. They do a great job with their chilies.
Awesome.
A really great job.
And you can't really get the Korean flavor without the chili. Mm-hmm. Because that chili in particular has certain qualities. It's not that hot. Mm-hmm. It's somewhat sweet and smoky and has all these different elements.
Yeah, the heat's very integrated into these.
Yeah. So the heat comes from bird's eye chilies.
Okay.
And those are from, what's John's farm?
Oh, Rincon Valley.
Do we know his last name? Because I'll probably
Triple T.
Triple T.
Oh, Triple T.
So
okay.
They grow a lot of peppers every year, and
they do.
I dry a lot, and I utilize. Yeah.
That's
those.
For the radishes.
Have you done anything with their Their lemon chili? Whew. Lemon
the,
drop.
The
lemon,
lemon
drop.
Yeah,
that one will knock your head off.
Yeah, we make a ferment with that and blended with carrots and onions.
Oh,
and then fermented.
Uh-huh.
We use the onions as the sugar in that.
Uh-huh.
And it's quite good. It's kind of a Mexican style. Mm-hmm. Like they would use habanero, but the lemon drops are great.
Yeah, the lemon drops. Yeah, I have a bottle of their lemon drop hot sauce. And it's good, but it's.
I have a friend that comes over and I test the peppers on him. I just have him eat them because he'll eat any pepper. And he tried all their peppers and he said the lemon drop pretty much knocked him on his knees. And
yeah,
it was fun to watch. I'm not gonna try it myself, but
it's pretty high on the Scoville scale.
Yeah.
Okay, that really transformed the radish.
Oh, totally.
That's
it's no longer
a radish. It's totally different.
Yeah.
Okay, so now.
So this is a Napa cabbage kimchi.
A Napa cabbage. I've been working with Napa cabbage a lot lately.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Where are you getting it?
I'm getting it. I think they said. Is it Foggy River or Singing Frog?
Oh,
Singing
okay,
Frog.
Yep.
Okay, yeah,
right.
Singing Frog, yeah. Yeah, that's where I get it.
Well, I believe they're out because we're on the search.
Yeah.
No, I've seen their rows. They have them. I've been to their farm. I've seen them. They just won't give them to
We're me. Trying to hoard all the Napa cabbage in the county right now.
Well, I only buy one a week, so. You have any thoughts about growing some of your own stuff?
Yeah, I actually do grow a lot of my herbs,
uh-huh.
like shiso and tarragon even. I don't have really the space to grow thousands of pounds of cabbage, though. So sure. I do like to utilize all the farmers in the community. I've contracted a few of them this year. I wasn't prepared this year for how much I'm doing.
We didn't know what we were getting into.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And a lot of the products I have are very seasonal because the farmers only have things during certain times.
Of course.
And I didn't utilize cucumbers like I should have and made tons of pickles. I didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. But and now you can this year.
Now this year, I'm prepared to buy every vegetable that there is. Really.
Have you had, last year, did you have a chance to get Cliff Silva's pickling cucumbers?
Cliff, yeah.
They're so good.
Yeah, and he grows those pointy cabbages.
The
little heirloom pointy cabbages.
Yeah, his cabbages, I usually don't make sauerkraut until I can get his cabbages. But his pickling cucumbers are so good.
Yeah.
I would buy them, and by the time, if I bought like a bag, half the bag would be gone by the time I'd driven home, and I only live a mile from the market. So I have to buy more. They're just so good.
Yeah. Most of ours came from Beet Generation.
Beet Generation.
Yeah. She calls me and lets me know when they're small, and I go out and pick them.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. She does. That's awesome. Libby. Bates,
yeah, Libby.
She does. And now Jill Adams is going to be the farm manager for her.
Oh, good.
I don't know if you guys, I don't think we're selling when Jill was selling. Jill had...
Oh, I know Jill. Yeah.
She had Crescent Moon Farm, and she introduced a few things. One of them, and I hope she grows this for Beet Generation, she grew red okra.
Oh, nice.
And they looked like little porcelain carvings. She introduced Sonoma County. I think she was the first person to grow okra.
Yeah.
Indefinitely. She was the first person to grow padrones. No one was going padrones the year she started. She was the first one to grow shishitos.
Those are huge.
And they were so good. And then she was the second person in the county to make chipotle powder.
Oh, nice.
Tierra Vegetables started it. And then she came along... Gosh, nearly two decades later.
Yeah.
And she taught, before she left, she taught Libby everything she knows.
Oh, perfect, but,
you know, pickled, I mean, plain okra is great when it's grown well. But this red okra is just fabulous.
I was going to say about Cliff's, those heirloom cabbages, I actually ferment those whole.
You do? How long does that take?
About a month.
Okay.
I take the whole cabbage, I ferment it in a brine of Szechuan peppers, peppercorns. Just any kinds of peppers.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just let that ferment for a month in a 3.5% brine. That's just the salinity amount, anyone was wondering.
Yeah.
I use very specific salinity amounts because it is very specific anaerobic fermentation.
Right.
And I don't want to go over and I don't want to go under is the thing. And you can determine the sourness by how much salt you use.
Uh-huh. More sour?
Yes.
Okay.
As the salt decreases, the acidity will increase.
Oh, okay.
And
essentially, less salt, more sour. Is that right?
No, it's just that as the level of salt in the taste.
Okay. Oh, I see what you mean. Okay. Yeah,
when you taste it, the less the salt flavor will go away as the sourness increases.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's pretty awesome like that. Yeah. If you do a really long ferment, like a two-month ferment, you're going to need a lot of salt.
Uh-huh.
And it'll just get more and more sour.
Uh-huh. Salt will correct too much sourness on your palate.
Yeah. A lot of people make what I think is a mistake by putting old sauerkraut into a new batch to inoculate it.
Sure.
What you're doing is taking the final bacteria, which are not the initiating bacteria.
Right.
You're taking those, putting them in your cabbage, and it's actually going to turn into a way too sour product.
Oh, interesting.
Just far too sour. Uh-huh. A lot of Germans will not eat just sauerkraut. They'll wash their sauerkraut before they eat it because maybe it's excessively sour from that practice.
Oh, that's really interesting.
They'll wash it or they'll cook it or they'll add sugar to it or, you know.
Do you like sauerkraut yourself?
I love sauerkraut. Okay. I hated it when I was a kid.
I love it.
I love it. Okay,
love
cool.
It. I didn't,
okay, so
didn't
we got some more things here. Tell us.
Yes, more.
Is that a horseradish?
More.
Yeah, we have a little bit of
horseradish. Wait, what did you think of the kimchi?
I thought it was really good. It's a lot milder than some people think of kimchi.
Yeah.
It was very nice. It was integrated. It wasn't stinky, as some people call kimchi. So it would have been. Oh, look, this is burdock.
This next one is a fermented burdock.
Yes, I got
Orchard,
this when I was.
Orchard Farms is good enough to be growing tons of burdock.
Yes.
And I utilize them every week.
This helped me when I was getting over that heinous virus.
This is traditionally pickled in a Japanese style, which is rice vinegar and sugar. They pour boiling vinegar over burdock, mm-hmm. and they pickle it. It's called gobo. In some sushi restaurants, they do that, but then they dye it red for some reason.
With what?
I don't know what they use for dye, but it's not like a natural product.
Oh, they don't use beet
juice. It's not like
or anything.
Beet juice. Oh. But so I took that idea of gobo and I ferment the burdock with a salt brine, mm-hmm. Instead of vinegar. And so it creates its own organic acids rather than a final vinegar ferment.
Yeah.
And then I do, I put a gochujang, mm-hmm. which is a Korean chili paste that I've mm-hmm. fermented for about a year.
that's the one I thought smelled like beets.
Yeah. It's a really interesting ferment. I'll let you try it after.
Okay.
But it's too complex to talk about. No. So I malt my own barley.
Okay.
Which is a sprouting process.
Uh-huh.
They use it in beer making.
Right.
You sprout it to a certain point.
So
where
you take
the sugars
barley.
Sprout it.
With a little bit of water. Soak it in water.
Yeah, you soak it. And then you hang it in some fashion.
A sack?
I do a hemp sack.
Okay.
And then every hour or so, you dip it in water to keep it hydrated. And then after a few days, it sprouts to a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
4 days is usually when it's all the sugars have become available in the malt,
mm-hmm.
the sprouted barley. So I take that, I dry that, grind it into a flour, and
okay.
I use that. It has natural yeast on it.
Sure.
Is the thing.
Yeah.
And then I take a chickpea miso and I dry that.
Miso that you buy or that you make?
I get it from South River Miso Company.
Oh, okay.
They're on the East Coast,
uh-huh.
but they do make the best miso, in my opinion.
Oh, that's good to know. I love miso.
I've made my own miso, but it wasn't nearly as good as theirs, mm-hmm. and I would need a whole miso operation if I was going to get into that.
Yeah.
I've thought about it, and I've actually started planning,
uh-huh.
but it does take...
Down the road.
a good miso takes 3 years to ferment, so
oh.
it's kind of like you do all this, and then you have to wait 3 years.
Yeah.
But the chickpea miso is like maybe 3 months.
Uh-huh.
I use that because a lot of people are allergic to soy and
right.
the community.
And
so.
Soy is, you know, there's so much GMO
yeah.
soy. And
right, right. So I've dry that, blend it into a powder, and then I mix that with tons of Korean chilies.
Mm-hmm.
And then I make a rice porridge with this rice flour. And rice syrup. You make
oh.
a little porridge with that.
Oh, interesting.
You let that cool, and then you mix all those powders into the pot. And then you have this thick paste that, like we have here.
Uh-huh.
And then every day I put it out in the sun. It's in a crock. And every day I have a cheesecloth over it, and I'll put it out in the sun every day. Take it back in at night, put it in the sun during the day, to bring it back at night for about a year.
Wow. And you can
then,
really tell the rice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can tell that's the base.
Yeah.
I think. What do you think?
Okay.
Yeah, I think you can tell the rice.
The cool thing about it is it'll never go bad. It'll never develop yeast. It'll never develop mold.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just keep fermenting for years.
That's so interesting.
So I put that in the gobo
mm-hmm.
And ferment that with that.
Uh-huh. So when you buy the Korean chili paste, you're buying a commercial version of this.
Yeah, if you want to do that. Yeah.
No, but I mean, when you do, I mean,
well,
until
I don't.
You guys, no, but for the average person
yes,
who's
when the average person does,
so
yeah.
I just want to make that parallel.
Yeah.
That if you're buying it, now you have a local source, and that's really cool.
Right, but I don't sell mine.
Oh, you don't sell this?
No,
you just
I can't.
Use, oh.
I just utilize it in my ferment.
Darn.
So sorry.
Oh.
It would.
I was getting really excited.
I would have to sell these jars at a very...
Like $150.
Yeah, so maybe I'll auction them. But I've had a lot of people say that. Like,
yeah,
now
it's really good. It's really good. I'm going to clean the fork here.
They're the coveted ferment.
So what I just started doing is experimenting with making mustard using local organic wine.
What varietal?
Sauvignon Blanc for a Dijon. So this is, I think this is my Dijon.
I just finished writing my book on mustard.
Oh, nice.
Or rewriting a book I wrote a while ago.
I think I labeled these right.
Nice aromatics.
Yeah.
Really nice aromatics. And it's a coarse grain, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the texture.
The texture. Yeah. It's really got nice aromatics. Getting close to getting into that realm of the wasabi aromatics.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though wasabi is not mustard.
No.
But
yeah.
it does have that nasal
component,
which is nice.
I use a lot of the brown seeds as the that's
now,
where
you,
a lot of the heat comes from.
Are you selling these yet?
Yeah. I'll be selling these. This is a porter mustard. Porter and apple cider vinegar.
It definitely has that nasal thing going on.
Yeah.
Which is, that's so refreshing.
Yeah. One of the ways you can keep your mustard hot is utilizing cold vinegar rather than warm.
Yeah, you have to use a cold liquid
yeah,
to let
cold
it develop.
Liquids.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, and that way you keep the bitter flavors from
And then aging it for a few days in the fridge before you eat it alleviates some of the bitterness.
Yeah.
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 So
I had a few bottles of exploding mustard when I was working on my homemade mustards.
Yeah. So with Cliff's cabbage that I ferment whole, I take each leaf off the cabbage after it's fermented. I'll take a whole leaf and I'll roll it up with a bunch of greens from George's farm, Earthworker Farm, some of the mustard, some horseradish that I've fermented. We can try that next if you want. And then I roll that up and I serve that at the farmer's market.
I've seen that, yes, yes. And I should tell you, we've got 8 more minutes.
So oh my lord.
Time flies on Mouthful. You enter this time warp here. And we've only gone through, I should tell you, that we are talking with Sean and Kevin Pastel. The name is, for a short time longer, Farm to Ferments. There will be a new name sometime soon to avoid confusion with any other businesses. This is Mouthful's return to the air after a 4-month hiatus. You can find Farm to Ferments at the farmers markets in Santa Rosa at the Wells Fargo Center on Saturdays. Opens at 8:30, closes at 1, and on Sunday it opens officially at 10 and ends at 1:30, but you know, a lot of people show up earlier. So we've got a few more things to taste, including the last one, which is right here, is the one that I like.
Do you want
think
to jump
I'd
to
love.
That? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Talk to me about the shots that you've been making, because I'm
totally
enamored of them.
So I make a lot of fermented cocktails.
Yeah. Non-alcoholic cocktails.
Non-alcoholic cocktails. They would make very good alcoholic mixed drinks.
Yeah.
My kimchi juice is very reminiscent of a Bloody Mary without the vodka.
Yeah, and I think that is, Kevin, is that what you've been making them most often for me?
Yeah,
is
I've been
that,
making
is
this.
Is the kimchi juice in there?
It's a curtido sauerkraut brine with the kimchi juice and a little bit of our sriracha.
Okay. It's just, it's so good, and it gives me energy all day long.
We would have some more beverages, but unexpectedly we sold out this weekend.
Hey, congratulations. this is just that's
the brine that comes off of the kimchi.
It's by itself, it's just so good.
Yeah, it's rather invigorating, and it's like my coffee in the morning.
Yeah,
that would be a killer Bloody Mary.
Killer. Yeah. Oh, we get that pretty much every time.
How do you sell it at the market? Do you sell it only in shots, or do you sell bottles?
When I have a good quantity of it, I sell it in bottles.
Okay.
But normally I just do shots.
Okay, because I'm going to want some.
It is precious
bottles.
As gold to me.
I can understand, and I don't drink coffee. And the tea that I drink, I didn't know this, the tea that I drink, pour tea.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's very low in caffeine.
Very low.
It's delicious.
And it's a very short brew time. So
yeah, very short
brew
time.
You're not actually getting a lot of caffeine out of it.
No, but it tastes really good. But man,
it's great.
It doesn't give me the jolt.
Yeah.
That
we do. We
your
make
shots do.
We make a jun like a kombucha.
Uh-huh.
We do make a jeon that's green pu'er tea and cardamom.
Oh.
And those are boiled. Uh-huh. Or the cardamom's boiled, and then the tea is brewed traditional
cardamom,
style.
Cardamom's so wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I love cardamom.
And then that's brewed with honey for about 3 days with the jeon culture, and then we bottle that, and we serve it at the market. Uh-huh. I like to serve it with saffron and rose water if I can.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever experimented? I mean, I could be wrong, but what's the next step after fermentation? If you were to go further,
immortality.
Immortality.
Don't you have to
longevity and space migration?
Don't you have to go through distillation first? So I'm wondering if the next step is distillation.
Yeah,
before
just
you
concentrate
reach immortality.
Everything.
Yeah, I'm just wondering because
concentrate the kimchi juice and then
I'm
take it on the spacecraft.
Names. I'm not going to mention any names yet because the permitting process is going to unfold soon. But I was doing this art event. With my magic pantry apron at the Healdsburg Center for the Arts last night. And somebody who came sat there in the front row, and he pulled out a glass, and I recognized the shape of the glass. And then he poured this sort of deep green clear liqueur into it, and I knew immediately, it's like, oh. It was homemade absinthe.
Yeah, where's the spoon?
And then he took the spoon out, he put the sugar on, and then he took some special kind of thermos and put the water in and handed it to me while I was doing my, hour presentation. I've tasted a lot of absinthe.
Yeah.
I've tasted every one that's on the market in the United States and some that aren't. It was so good.
Yeah.
It was so good. And he's using some of the traditional herbs, but some non-traditional. He's got damian in there.
Yeah.
It was just so beautiful. Mm. And that just got me to think, thinking about distillation.
Right.
And, here it just seems like, okay, well, what would be next? Distillation.
Well, Sean's been experimenting just with corn beer at home, so, maybe
I get tier of vegetable. I'll go get their grain corn,
and
I'll malt that myself, and then make beer.
Sour beers.
Sour beers, which are...
Sour beers are the best beers I've ever tasted.
Which have an interesting effect on the body. Rather than getting completely intoxicated and wobbling around and getting sedated, you kind of get high.
That's so interesting.
Your senses tend to increase rather than numb.
That's so interesting because the first time I take... I don't like IPAs or double IPAs.
Yeah, well, the thing...
I drink one and I just want to go... I feel bloated and I want to go to sleep.
The thing about beer on the market is it all has hops.
Yes,
hops is a sedative, and hops is an estrogenic compound.
Uh-huh.
It develops estrogen in your system.
Interesting.
It releases that.
Okay, and it makes
so the beer belly may be related to hops.
To hops, yeah.
And it makes you want to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And it's just not a very... I don't know. It's not that great of an herb to put in beer.
But then
you can put all
beer.
Kinds of other psychoactive herbs in the beer and have way better effects to me.
Well, sour beer. The first time I tasted a sour beer, I was like, what?
Yeah.
I actually love beer?
Yeah, that's awesome.
And then there were a bunch of them. I was in Brooklyn for a few days last summer, and there's lots of really, really tiny breweries with several different varieties of sour beer.
Yeah.
They're so good, and we need more.
Yeah. And
you can't buy them in the market. You can't buy them bottled.
Yeah.
I tried. No, Oliver's doesn't have any sour beers.
The thing about sour beer is when you do it the indigenous way, is it does not last very long on the shelf.
Mm.
I have to drink mine within a few weeks if I'm going to have something that's edible. Because it'll just keep fermenting the sugars and it'll just get turned into vinegar after a while.
Well, you know what? So. We're just about done.
All right.
You have to tell me about this last one.
Okay. So this is a jeon.
This is the one that is Feed Your Head.
It's called Feed Your Head, and it's got a lot of nervous system tonic herbs and male reproductive system herbs.
It's not going to turn me masculine, is it?
No, it's also, some of these herbs, people would argue, are actually for both parties, male and female, but I mainly developed it for males. I also have a ladies one. For the ladies, for balancing hormones.
Is it here?
I don't have it here.
Okay.
We sold out.
Okay, but you'll have it next week?
I'll have it next week.
Okay.
It's a pretty pink color, too.
It's pink, yeah.
Just to add to our colors of beverages.
Yes, it's such a rainbow. It's a beautiful rainbow.
We have the colored krauts, and now we're looking for the colored
beverages. So it's very strong. It's a medicinal tonic, It's got many different layers to it. It has roots. It has herbs. It has flowers.
Would be really good with some heat in it.
Yeah. You're just obsessed with heat.
Well,
you want some horseradish.
It would, you know, it's good, but it's like, okay, let's put some heat on top of that.
Yeah. It has turmeric, a lot of turmeric, fresh turmeric.
Mm-hmm. Which is so good for you.
It's great. Anti-inflammatory.
Yeah. People with arthritis should be eating turmeric every day.
Totally. Yeah. And sarsaparilla, cat's claw, brahmi, ashwagandha.
Cat's claw. Awesome.
It's a great adaptogenic herb.
Uh-huh.
Catuaba, which is mainly a male herb. Nettle root.
Nettles are so great.
I use the root and the leaves.
And the leaves, yeah.
Yeah. And then I top it off with Damiana, skullcap, elderflowers, and cardamom and cinnamon for the spice flavor.
Well, it's wonderful. And on that note, Mouthful is over.
All right.
You know,
thank you for
having us. Time flies
when
you're having a good time on Mouthful. Our first show in 4 months. Thank you very much for tuning in. If you're just now tuning in, Mouthful's time has changed. We are on 6 to 7, no longer 7 to 8. I'm not even sure. Mike, do you know what's coming up next?
Yeah, America's Test Kitchen is coming up next.
Oh, that's right. That's not the local show. That's the global show.
This is the global show. This is Sonoma County's Test Kitchen.
Exactly.
Right.
And, you know, thank you so much. I love what you're doing. It's one of the more exciting developments. I'm one of your biggest fans now.
Well, thank you
so much. So thanks so much for taking the time to
thanks
come
for
in.
Having us here.
And thank you for listening, and meet me back here next week. I'm hoping that we're going to do a show that ties in with this. I'm hoping that we have someone who makes some kimchi, some sauerkrauts, and some mustards to augment his brother's fabulous sausages. So meet me back here for another yummy episode of the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. Mouthful, I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Have a great week.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up for family farms. Selling out. Who can blame them? Wine's a cash crop growing strong. And in the fields of Pendle Valley, buildings sprout up like new sown seeds. Now they call it Telecom Central, cause this is what consumers need. I am the hand that rocks the cradle. I am the voice that sings their song. I am the one for local color, salt of the earth, but not for long. Take a look, cause I'm gone. For gamblers in this brand new chorus, and moving in by truck and car, tripling the cost of living, this is progress. This land once open and free. Well, they got pictures in the museum of local color that used to.
You've been listening to Mouthful on KRCB-FM. Back from a long hiatus and gladly back. You are listening to KRCB-FM, Windsor, Santa Rosa, Radio 91 on Comcast cable channel 961 and the best way to listen is via our new web app.